Welcome to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotirolder, Chef in the Hat.
We're happy to be with you here on Cairo every weekend.
Absolutely.
For a couple of hours. And we do both Saturday and Sunday sometimes, depending on the sports schedule. We have a large show today, as we always do. We're going to answer some of your questions this week on how to downsize your Thanksgiving dinner. I know we just made the decision to downsize ours to four people from 24. So you just don't need to cook the same
from
amount of
24
food.
To four?
Yeah.
It's going to be some leftovers because I know you can't cook for four.
We're going to talk to the folks at the new Stella restaurant, which is up at the Hotel Sorrento. Their new project. That restaurant has been so many things.
Yeah.
When I first moved here, it was called the Hunt Club. And it's been about five restaurants since then. It's kind of interesting.
And just so you know, if you drive by the Sorrento right now, they have this giant conic see-through tent on their patio that looks marvelous.
Yes. Cities we miss. You and I have been reflecting back since we can't travel very much anymore, reflecting back on the cities that we miss. And where would we go if we were to go right back tomorrow or tonight? And where would we be the first stop that we would make? And then Maddie has been taking on, you know, she thinks that we're just old jerks.
Yeah.
And so
she's totally wrong on that.
Yeah. We're just jerks.
We're just old.
She's been kind of looking at places that interest her because she thinks that because of her generation gap between us that
she knows better.
Well, not just better, but a different take, right? She hasn't been to all the places. She doesn't have the friends that we have.
Right.
Make the connections that we've made. So. Yay, Brittany Bartleben is back for the Baker's Corner this week. We're going to talk about some lonely fruits in your produce section of the grocery store. Man, we got a busy show. Our Pass It Down segment with a Danish recipe. And also, of course, we're going to bring you the Rub With Love sponsored Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. That's always a fun way to wrap up the show. So we got much to do and little time to do it, so we better get busy.
Yes.
Chef, let's start off with a dish that maybe you enjoyed this week. Either you made it or you had it in a restaurant or...
Well, you know, I want to give a big shout to my mushroom gatherer, which I haven't bought any wild mushroom, in a little while, mainly because, first of all, I'm not buying enough right now to call him and say, bring me 2 pounds instead of 20 pounds of mushroom. So I haven't called him, but he... send me a bag of mushroom, some little button chanterelle, and some matsutakis. Now, I just wanted to say that the taste of the week was those matsutaki cleaned off and then sliced thin, put into, I have a vegetable stock. I always have a vegetable stock at Luke. And put the vegetable stock, put the sliced matsutaki in there for a couple of minutes. Really bring the vegetable stock down first. Put the sliced matsutaki in there. A little bit of argan oil and a nugget of butter. Blend the whole thing up together, just the juice. So it's nice and frothy. Oh, my God. That flavor of matsutake is like...
Never been my favorite, although I do like it in a tea.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I was replicating. Mm-hmm. And there was four people who sat outside on the patio at Luke on Tuesday night. I called them warriors because it was definitely not outdoor weather. That we have a heater, and they were like, oh, no, it's fine. We have our ski jackets. I'm like, cool. So at the end of their meal, I brought them, after their entrees, I brought them a nice hot cup of matsutake broth, and they were enchanted. But the flavor of that matsutake. Oh.
Well, it actually has flavor, unlike a lot of chanterelles.
Yeah.
You know, that
I think it's the most flavorful mushroom besides truffle. Truffle are the same section of, like, overpowering kind of thing, you know, like superpower.
And almost everyone that I know, especially young chefs, they overuse matsutake. They use way too many. They taste like pine salt.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a real piney scent to them. So if you go to a fine, like a Kashiba restaurant, right? Shiro Kashiba.
Yeah.
And have the dashi with matsutake, there is a thin, like wafer thin, paper thin slice of matsutake in there to flavor the entire pot of what, 8 ounces of soup.
Right.
And people often just overdo it. Of course, that matsutake, when I first moved here, the matsutakis would sell for $1,000 a pound in Japan.
Yeah,
I don't know what the market is today for them.
It's not that it's not as crazy as it used to be. I think it was much crazier in the early 80s than it is now because I think, first of all, people are gathering more.
Right. They discovered them, right?
They're looking for them. So there is more on the market. And I think then the Japanese have probably figured out how to get some in their country as well. So they're maybe not importing as much. I don't know what the secret is, but, you know, you can find Matsutake for like $30 a pound.
Right.
And you don't need a pound.
Well, they were never that expensive here, but in Japan, they were very highly
priced.
Yeah.
In Japan, they're super highly priced.
Okay, I'll stick on the mushrooms. I got a couple of chanterelles down in Phoenix when I was there over the last few days, or Scottsdale, I guess it is, and then did that dry roast on them with some butter and some bacon fat. I was making a veal chop, right? So I was just doing like
how bad can that go? You already said bacon fat.
Yeah. Anyway, once again, they don't have a lot of the chanterelles. They don't.
Right.
They're so pretty, though. I just tear them. I try not to chop them. I like to tear them.
Yeah.
And so that you end up, I tear from the top down the stem.
Right.
And you end up with this beautiful kind of wispy mushroom and just slow roasted them with the bacon. And then I added some quartered creminis also because actually to me, the creminis have the more flavor.
Right.
And then just a little red wine reduction with the veal, pan-fried veal pan juices, you know. And
sounds delicious.
Yeah.
So you had veal chop?
Yeah.
Wow. I haven't had a veal chop in so long.
You know, I tend to not love the milk-fed veal chops, right?
Right.
There's just no flavor.
Correct.
But the grass-fed veal, which is what you get in northern Italy often in the Piemonte area, they don't really eat beef as much as they eat veal.
Right.
And it's just a matter of age on the steer, right? So, but when you have carne crudo over there with a big glass of Barolo or something, that's just that raw beef. The veal, they only had three veal chops. Two of the milk-fed and one of the grass-fed, so I thought it would be fun to try the difference. Grass-fed, way better.
Oh, yeah.
Way better.
More flavor.
Delicious.
For sure.
Yeah. Really, really nice product. So, yeah, veal chops might be a fun thing to think about for this holiday season.
Absolutely.
Who knows? Who knows what you're thinking? So those are our Taste of the Week. Up next, how to downsize your Thanksgiving. I don't know about you, Chef, but we've been getting a lot of questions. Maddie, you said you've been getting a lot of questions about how to... just make things smaller. And it's hard, I think. It's like what people always say about cooking for one after their spouse has died or something. It's just hard. And it's not as fun when you're not making it for somebody else.
Correct.
Right?
There is definitely something about cooking for someone is a lot more fun than cooking just for yourself.
And in reality, over a year's time, you know, Thanksgiving is only once a year, Christmas once a year, you might only make 5 or 10 big dinners in an entire year.
Right.
So basically, giving up one of those is painful.
It is.
So we're going to talk a little bit about how to maybe take that down so that you don't end up with Thanksgiving leftovers for
weeks.
A month.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to do that when we come back. It's Hot Stove Society Radio on Cairo 97.3. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Let's talk about downsizing our favorite family holiday, or at least my favorite meal of the year.
Me too.
When it comes to family and tradition and all the things that go with Thanksgiving. Because, frankly, we're not going to be able to have the parties we used to have.
Nope. It's definitely not going to be big platters. It's going to be smaller plates.
Smaller platters. So, Chef, there's a lot of ways to think about taking Thanksgiving down. I would encourage people not to lose their traditions.
No.
Or maybe this is the year to break all your traditions and try something. Have a steak.
Well, there's a different way of looking at it. I mean, to me, not breaking tradition is to still have a dinner.
Mm-hmm.
To change some of the part of the dinner is what's going to happen this year, I think, necessarily, because if you order a 12, 15-pound turkey, you're going to have a hard time going through that if there's only two of you in the house.
Yeah.
Where if you instead maybe change this year from a turkey to a guinea fowl or a pheasant or a different bird. I mean, it's the same principle. It's just done on a smaller scale.
How about if you stay with turkey, though, and you just start thinking about the bird itself? Okay, so you can probably find an 8 to 10-pound turkey. That's probably the smallest you're going to find, right?
Yeah.
So you could start there, but you could also just say, okay, I'm going to buy two turkey legs and have a braised turkey leg, almost like veal ossobuco,
but
you're going to do it with turkey legs instead.
Sure.
Or you could, you know, they sell all the parts of the turkey now in the grocery store. So you could take and have a turkey breast. I've been showing this, doing this in my classes, for my Thanksgiving classes, where I take the breast and I cut the top third with the skin. I cut it flat, like parallel to the cutting surface. I take the top third of the bird and butterfly it open. Not all the way sure. through, but butterfly it open. And then I take the bottom third and I cut it the other way.
Right.
So now I've got this, what was kind of an oval-shaped
like
turkey breast. I now have this almost 12-inch wide turkey breast, all one piece. And so then I make something like an apricot butter. Right. So I'll take dried apricots, fresh sage leaves, maybe a little bit of shallot, salt and pepper, and butter. And I put it in my food processor or in my mortar and pestle, and I make a paste. Then I take that paste and I spread it all over that butterflied open turkey breast. And then from the meat side, not the skin side, I want to end up with the skin side on top.
Right.
From the meat side, I just roll that thing all the way back up like a roulade, right?
Right.
Now I end up with my breast on top. I just tie it up with butcher string. I tie a couple of sprigs of sage or rosemary or some sort of herb on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks so super pretty when you're cooking it.
Right.
Put the herb and skin side down in the pan, give it a sear. Turn it over, finish it in the oven to 155, 160 degrees, because it'll travel
of course.
Another 5 or 10 degrees as it rests. And then now you have this one turkey breast that is, what, 2 to 3 pounds?
Also very moist because of all that butter inside.
Mm-hmm.
That wetness is definitely keeping the breast nice, and it's going to have a nice flavor, plus it's going to be moist. So
right.
No worry about drying at the breast, so that's good.
Yeah. And, you know, we're doing this in our Thanksgiving box out of the dock, although it is sold out, which is amazing.
You sold out for Thanksgiving already?
Yeah.
Also, I can start making mine.
Last week we sold out.
Let's talk about mine that I haven't made yet.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's kind of crazy. But that's kind of what we're going to do for our Thanksgiving boxes. And what you can do with that then is that when you're serving that, it still smells and tastes like Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
You're still roasting it in a pan, so you have drippings to make gravy from, right? And you've already made stock from all the extra turkey bones you bought, or because there's plenty of those in the marketplace. And then you can have a little bit of a traditional Thanksgiving, but have it kind of in a mini way.
Right.
Still have enough. If it's just two people, a 3-pound turkey breast will give you enough food for 5 or 6 people.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot of food. That's a lot of food.
It's 5 or 6 people, so you still have leftovers.
It's pure meat, so it's pure. There's nothing to get in the way. So mm-hmm. everything is edible. You're going to have some leftovers probably, and it's a great food to put in a pasta if you the next day, or to put in the rice, or to put in
soup. I always make turkey soup from the carcasses.
I mean, delicious.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I just think that the turkey's the hardest one to deal with. If you're intent on having turkey. Now, I agree with you, a guinea fowl, which is going to be hard to find, I got to say. And, you know, frankly, if you want to offer it, you could say, if you want a guinea fowl, order it through you.
Yeah, just call me. I'll give you a guinea. I'll buy you a guinea fowl. That's not hard.
No, you won't buy it for them. But they have to reimburse you.
I'll send you somewhere where you can buy it yourself.
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah.
I'll find you the place to get a guinea fowl or a pheasant or a duck. I mean, a duck is also a nice change. But I'm all with you about if turkey is what you want, because it's only, you know, people pretty much eat turkey. It's pretty much the only day of the year that they do
well,
that.
Well, that kind of turkey, right?
Yeah, that kind of turkey.
Turkey sandwich is the number one selling sandwich in America around the year.
Right.
So.
But I would definitely, I'm with you, bone out the turkey, make it sizable to what your dinner is going to be. Freeze some of the pieces if you buy a 12-pound turkey or 10-pound turkey.
Instead of cooking the whole thing? Or you could freeze them freeze them frozen. You could freeze cooked also.
Cooked, but you know, raw is good too because it gives you more chance to do whatever you want later
mm-hmm.
with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a good way to do it. You bone out your turkey, you still have the bone, you still can make your stock, your gravy, all that stuff, and you can put one breast in the freezer, one leg in the freezer, and keep one breast and one leg for your dinner or whatever. So there's ways to get around all that by thinking ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the stock. We're talking about stock and gravy. If you don't have any bone the day of, do it now. Make your stock now. Buy a chicken or buy chicken bones and make a chicken stock.
You can find turkey bones out there right now. A couple of wing tips and things like that are out there make great stock.
Yeah, I mean, make your stock ahead of time. And those are things you can do, especially if you're only two of you or four of you. You know, it's a big enterprise to do the dinner just for four. What else? So vegetables
everything
is not an issue.
Everything has to kind of be sized down, right? Whether it's cranberry sauce or not. So if a lot of times those cranberries only come in one clamshell, and they come, about a pound
A pound.
Or 12 ounces,
pound
something
bag.
Like that. Those cranberries are delicious in cranberry muffins, a cranberry apple crisp. So just make the amount of cranberry sauce you need, which is maybe half a cup for two people, and then those other cranberries, IQF them, right?
Yeah.
Individually quick freeze them, and they can be used in a million other
of course.
Ways. But
yeah.
it is, you can't get them to sell you a half a bag of cranberries.
No.
So you have to kind of think,
right.
and how do I want to use these?
And then
maybe
this,
you love cranberry sauce, you just make a bunch of it.
You know, vegetable, you go to a store, you can buy one turnip, one parsnip, one potato, one whatever vegetable you need, you can buy one of each.
Don't you think people get tied up sometimes about cutting a recipe in half?
They, makes they, them, they very much get
scared. It just takes them out of their comfort zone.
Yeah, which is interesting because I always do a big pan of roasted vegetable for Thanksgiving because that's one of my favorite things. But, you know, you buy one parsnip, like I said, one turnip, one carrot. You buy all those root vegetables, you peel them off, you just dice them, you know, toss them with some fresh herbs and some butter, put that in the oven. You still will end up with a pyrex of roasted vegetable that you can eat in the next few days.
Mm-hmm.
You will have, because you will have leftovers, that's not an issue, but you don't have that much than if you were cooking for 20 people. And the most interesting part that I like about those roasted vegetables, 2-3 days later, I'm like, uh-oh, I might not get through this in dinner time. I take the whole thing, put it in the pot, put some of my chicken stock on top of that, bring it to a boil, and use the burr mixer, the hand mixer, or put it in the Vitamix blender, blend the whole thing up, and I got a beautiful roasted vegetable soup.
Yeah.
And I can put that in quarts in my freezer and be done with that.
Yeah, it's the perfect time to lard your freezer with different little things that you could make. Turkey chili. I made turkey mole last April when we first opened Serious Pie Takeout out in Ballard. And it was, I put
that
it on the
delicious.
Menu. It was so good.
Yeah, it sounds
I had
delicious.
So much, yeah. It was really, really nice.
But don't be afraid to downsize. If you have any questions, just send it away. Perfect. I would go to Select Gourmet Food in...
Woodinville.
It's not Woodinville.
Awful?
Kenmore. Select Gourmet Food.
Select Gourmet Food.
They'll find you something.
And do they have a retail shop again up there?
Yeah, they have a retail shop in Juanita. That's where it's called. Juanita.
Okay. All right.
Juanita Drive.
Up next, we have been bitten by the travel bug, but we can't go. So it's time to relive some of our memories as
really too bad.
As we mentally travel around the world again. This time we're going to visit L.A., some of your favorite places in L.A., which is where you moved from when you moved to Seattle, right?
That's correct.
All right. And then Maddie's going to tell us what she thinks is the best, because she has no idea. When we come back on the Hot Stove Society Radio, Cairo 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And chef, I happen to be lucky enough to be able to travel to Scottsdale this last week. First time I've traveled. Well, I haven't traveled commercial yet, but a friend of mine was going down, offered a ride. So I went with him and played golf for 4 days with four guys. We had our own little golf bubble. But it reminded me once again how much I miss our friends around the country, around the world, traveling and visiting and sitting in a restaurant in New York City and talking to somebody that you've known for 30 years,
yep.
you know, and they followed somewhat your same chefy path or however it is that you know them. It's in New York City, for example, my friend Ed Levine, right? He's
yeah.
the one who got me on the Northwest Airlines chef team, the Marshall Field chef team. We've just known each other through that kind of for over the years. So when I go to New York, I always travel around the restaurants with him, and we see lots of people that we know. So it's super fun. Let's go to L.A. this week.
All right.
Because L.A. is where, when I first met you some 31 years ago, is my guess, or 30 years ago. That's a long time ago. You were just fresh from L.A. Fresh from L.A. So I don't imagine there's a whole lot of those restaurants that are still open, although I'm sure some are. But if you were to go to L.A. tomorrow, let's just say you're super hungry and you go tonight, what's your first stop going to be? Is it going to be someplace new, or is it going to be someplace that you've been before?
No, somewhere I've been before. Usually the first stop is always in a place that I'm, you know, because you're getting off a plane, whatever. It's like traveling day. So traveling day, I would stop at Gelina in Venice because it's right close to the airport.
Uh-huh.
Stop in there and sit at that counter. They have a beautiful bar. They have many rooms in that place. It's a pretty big place. I don't know if they're open right now because I haven't been.
It's Gelina, is that right? Gelina?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I have their cookbook too.
The feel in that place is like, it's like when I go to the Palace, you know, mm-hmm. your restaurant. It's that feel good kind of, you know, there is no pressure. But the food is delicious. They have a very extended menu.
It's huge.
Extensive menu, I should say, not extended. Extensive menu and very many, many ways to access that place. Mm-hmm. And the food's always been delicious. I've been there probably five times. It's always been delicious. I've been there for lunch. I've been there for dinner. And the vibe in that place is so... It's kind of like that crowded brick wall, kind of like the same I remember of the palace. It reminds me of the palace because of the feeling you get when you're in there.
Everyone copies the palace.
Well, it's a good idea. When an idea is good, it's flattery.
Yeah. I'm just kidding.
But anyway, Jelena would be my first stop right down there because it's, again, it's close to, it's in Venice.
And I would say from a price standpoint, that's middle of the road.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely not more expensive than many places you're going to go to.
So for me, Nancy Silverton's and Mario Batali's, well, it used to be Mario's, but it's just Nancy's.
And Osteria,
Osteria Mozza was one of my places that I would go every time. Certainly... as expensive as you want to make it. The opportunity was huge to spend money there. But I loved that little mozzarella bar that they had in the middle of the restaurant, and Nancy would often be standing there working. And it was always nice to kind of just let her just make these little poo-poos kind of all based around mozzarella kind of for you and sit there and chat with her. And
I've had many experiences there, too, and it definitely is a highlight of Los Angeles.
You know, she is one of the all-time best bakers in the world.
Right.
I think.
Yeah.
When she was over at... she
La Brea Bakery.
Opened, they did La Brea Bakery, but it was in Campanile, right?
Yeah, Campanile,
Was the restaurant, which is now another restaurant. I tried to go there last time I was in L.A., and it wasn't for me. She is just a... She's a...
A breadswolf.
Yeah, she's a powerful woman when it comes to her skill level. It's just awesome. Yeah, so that's where I'd be heading back to is Osteria Mozza. And then right next door to Osteria Mozza is Pizzeria Mozza.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of that place. There's a group that came out of San Francisco that opened up in L.A., kind of in the industrial area. And most of the restaurants there went out of business, but these guys have hung on. And the factory. There's a thing called the factory that went out of business there. But it's another good one by the owners of Francis Restaurant in San Francisco. Oh. Really delicious. We had a great meal there the last trip to L.A., so I couldn't even...
There is also, a classic that I have revisited over the last... I mean, I knew Wolfgang when he was at Ma Maison. That's when I first came to Los Angeles, and then he opened Spago in Hollywood, and then he moved Spago to Beverly Hills. And still to date... Spago is an interesting restaurant. The food is always good.
Mm-hmm.
Very well managed, very well controlled. I mean, it's obviously not a cheap restaurant. If you're trying to go on a budget, that's not a place I would recommend. But if you have a little money to spend for a fine dining experience, and it's a bustling restaurant. I mean, it's a busy restaurant. But the food has always been delicious. And to me, that's impressive to see that kind of restaurant survive over many years.
40 years now, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very high longevity in a place where restaurant turnover in 2 years, they're gone.
Oftentimes.
Yeah.
You know, that's the first place that I went to Nobu.
Oh, yeah.
It was called Matsuhita at the time, and it was right across the street from L'Orangerie.
Right.
And I still talk to people that when they go to L.A., the only place, first place they go is the Prime Rib House or Lowry's.
Why?
Yeah, exactly. But people love those old kind of prime rib restaurants.
I must say that Musso and Frank on Hollywood Boulevard, if you want to go for a good diner breakfast, a greasy breakfast, it's a great place to go. It's
Musso
a classic.
Frank.
Musso and Frank's been there for probably, 70 years, maybe 50 years. I don't know how long, but it's definitely the diners on Hollywood Boulevard. I mean, it's you have to go there. Musso and Frank.
So, Maddie, you've just heard some of the old ones that would make sure that we're on our list to visit. I can't remember the name of the...
Georgina. M. Georgina.
M. Georgina.
Is the name of the restaurant. Yeah. In the row.
R-O-W. Oh, yeah.
It's so good. Yeah. But also, there's the Prime Dip restaurant there.
Ooh, yum.
I know. You love that. So does Jackie. So where would you go? Someplace new that you think that us... Terry and I wouldn't... No. Maybe Terry and I wouldn't know about.
That's true. So there's a couple new places that are actually recently featured that have opened up in Los Angeles. One looks absolutely gorgeous. It's actually called Fingers Crossed. It's just between Sunset and Hollywood Boulevard. It is a very strict Roman-style menu of pastas and pizzas, little starters, but they have a fiore di zucca pizza with mozzarella di bufalo and squash blossoms. They also have a beautiful pizza with fiore di latte and wild mushrooms with a fennel little sausage on top that sounded really good. The dining room looks beautiful. It looks like they took over this whole interior garden. So my colleague Amy and I want to get down there right away because it just looks like a gorgeous dining room. So we're super excited to check that out. There's also a new restaurant called Nueva, no pun intended, in Venice Beach. They have an octopus taco that everybody is talking about with a little cilantro salsa, some plum and mint in the taco as well with the octopus. They also have a very cool extensive ceviche menu with both hamachi and uni with a little bit of charred peanuts and Fresno chili that sounded delicious.
Ceviche kind of comes and goes. It's like the hot thing, doesn't it?
Man, it's
remember
also
Rodriguez in New York? He had his whole ceviche thing.
Right.
And it just didn't last. I wonder why that is.
Yeah, I don't know. But it was good. Yeah. You know, I typically fly down to John Wayne. I'm a Chapman University grad.
Uh-huh.
So Orange County is my little home base. Ooh. But I do love Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles in Los Angeles. It's one of my all-time favorite places. And then the beloved Hosum Bistro off Newport Boulevard has the most delectable chicken. Ooh,
these
Asian
places
chicken
sound
salads.
A little bit old to me.
They kind of do sound old, but you know what? They're so good.
I was watching a little bit of Flip or Flop last night. They were all in Orange County and Alameda. And,
so delicious. So Arcadia, I'm excited to go back.
Called.
I'm excited to go down. I want to go back.
I know.
You got 1 minute.
LA. There's so many places we haven't even talked about that.
What about the two hot tamales?
Yeah, I was going to say Boulder Grill and
Mary
all those
Sue
guys.
Mary Sue and Susan. Yeah.
I mean, Mary Sue. And there's so many places.
Finnegar. Susan Finnegar.
Yeah, and then downtown. We haven't even touched downtown. There's so many new places. I used to work downtown LA in 1986 and 84, 85, 86. There was no man's land down there. It was a little bit solo. Now there's like so many good restaurants down there.
I heard that, and I haven't been to it, but I heard that Chris from Pizzeria Bianco is opened in L.A. too.
Not, oh, really?
I've not been to his place there. So, Pizzeria Bianco in downtown Phoenix. Mm. All right, up next, we have new friends opening at the Stella restaurant at the Hotel Sorrento up there on First Hill. I'm going to chat with them in the next segment on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society radio show, 97.3 FM. And we're back. Hot Stove Society Radio. Chef in the Chapeau.
Monsieur Douglas.
Nice to have you next to me here, within 8 feet.
We definitely are.
We have some new friends over at the Hotel Sorrento.
Yes.
The old Hunt Club restaurant is the one that I knew many, many years ago. My friend Rusty Trailer, actually, who was my original chef at Boondock, Sundeckers, and Green Thumbs.
Oh, my God.
On Broadway.
Right back to the early 80s.
Went and really took on that project in the early 80s to reopen the Hunt Club. And now it's morphed into different, what should I say, restaurants or different attempts at kind of deciding what they wanted to do with it. And now we've got a new one right here with these gentlemen that's sitting right in front of us. We have Reed Kendall. He's the director of food and beverage at Stella at the Hotel Sorrento. And Jesse Sear, lead bartender at the Hotel Sorrento. So, welcome, gentlemen.
Hey.
Thank you.
Welcome.
So, Terry, you were just talking about the beautiful tent that's in the parking. It used to be the kind of roundabout there, the Porte Cochere.
Porte Cochere.
Porte Cochere, And now it's covered in a tent, right?
Yep. You also built a platform for it, right?
No, it's
a few years ago.
It used to be a sort of roundabout for the cars. It had a fountain there and everything, but now I guess in the past couple of years, it's been used as a sort of garden space, outdoor dining space. So we've put a nice, big, beautiful tent in there. So
it looks gorgeous.
Thank you.
Very inviting.
Yeah. We're calling it the Star Garden. So
Very cool.
So the new cuisine style, I understand it to be somewhat Italian.
Yeah, it's a coastal Italian-inspired cuisine. Sort of a mix of that traditional coastal Italian cuisine. I'm married with the Seattle Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Cinque Terre
stair-stepping down the hill of Madison.
Right, exactly. Or if like Seattle was a neighborhood in some coastal Italian.
Last time I was in Cinque Terre, I remember we got stuck in some place and I was playing cards with Jackie under a bare light bulb in some place that we thought was going to be super fancy. We totally got hosed.
Things does up.
Yeah, we got hosed. Well, it looks like Jesse's bringing over a few cocktails for us. So it is, you can't do a bar or a restaurant anymore without some fabulous cocktail program. So, Jesse, what do we have here? This looks beautiful.
Oh, thank you. This is a cocktail. We just launched a brand new cocktail menu on Sunday. So this cocktail is called Wings of Venus. And all the cocktails on the menu are named after Italian Renaissance paintings, or like they're famous, Da Vinci and Michelangelo and stuff like that. So this one is, I apologize, it might not be quite cold as where it should be, but... this is a Fino sherry-based cocktail. So sherry is a super important thing to me. I love it. It goes well with so many different dishes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a little underutilized, especially in America. People are a little weird about sherry. They don't quite understand it. So I always like to use sherry in a lot of my cocktails since it is very food-friendly. But this is a Fino sherry, a citrus bliss tea infused gin, which is down at Market Spice, is where I get my tea. A little Chiaro Amaro, and a touch of yellow chartreuse.
Wow.
So why is sherry your favorite? I mean, sherry is an ancient tradition.
It is, yes.
So what in it makes it food-friendly? What in it makes you happy?
I think what a lot of people don't realize about sherry is that it is a... it is seen as a wine. It is a fortified wine, yes, but you can have a glass of sherry. It's very common to do in Spain, especially with tapas and even French and Italian cuisine as well. Mm. It's not uncommon to have a glass of sherry with dinner. America is a little bit different. They're a little bit uncomfortable with the idea just because fortified wines in general don't sell very well in America because it's not really an American invention. Uh-huh. So I personally love it because of the different layers of flavors in it. You can have a very, very dry sherry, like a Fino, which is in this one, or a Manzanilla. Or you can kind of start getting into a little bit richer, a little bit more like dried fruits and nuttiness with Amontillado and Olorosos, all the way up to your sweet dessert wines like Pedro Ximenez and Muscadel.
So it just gives you a broad palette to work from when you're building a cocktail.
Absolutely, yeah. You want to bump up certain flavors in the cocktail. Sherry has probably what you're looking for in more often than not. And it's also low alcohol, so you can
it's a very specific flavor, which is really nice.
What's the grape varietal in sherry generally?
There's three that you can use. So Muscatella and Pedro Ximenez are for the sweeter wines, but the majority of sherry is made from the Palomino.
Palomino.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Jesse, what's your favorite dish on the menu? Coastal. I said Jesse. I meant Reed, but you can both go.
I bet we can both answer.
Yeah, you go
there. Actually, last night I just had, again, I love it. We have a really nice bolognese. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit, or mostly, predominantly beef. I believe 80% ground beef, 20% ground pork in the sauce. It's very traditional, very straightforward, and just super delicious. I like it a lot.
And Reed, do you have a favorite?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Bronzino.
Uh-huh.
So I'm a big fan of the Mediterranean sea bass. But the bolognese is actually very, very delicious. All of our pastas are all made fresh daily.
Are you doing that Bronzino as a whole fish? Like just whole?
We're doing half.
Half.
We attempted a whole one to see how it would go, but it was a pretty monster plate.
It's so expensive.
It's a big fish.
Right, you have to be really hungry.
And a lot of people are kind of shying away from whole fish. They're scared of it. They're like, oh, I don't want to eat.
Well, especially on a fish like that, don't you think, chef, is that you have to get your partner to want to eat that fish too, right?
You can't, it's a fish for two, not fish for
definitely.
Meal.
Definitely.
Yeah, no, I agree.
The only restaurant I've ever been in that wouldn't let you split the fish was Milos in New York City, which was
that would make sense.
Greek restaurant, right? And you always think Greek food, not so expensive, blah, blah, blah. Most expensive place I've ever been.
Oh, wow.
Because they would walk you over to the kitchen and there'd be a whole display of all the different whole fish. And you said, well, honey, do you want to split that one? And say, oh, no, no, no. You have to order your own fish. So it was like $150 for an entree. It's crazy. Yeah,
yeah, so. No, it's definitely the most expensive Greek restaurant on the planet.
I get it, for sure. I wonder if it still is
times. I wonder what they're doing right now.
In these times. Capitol Hill, you know, there's been a lot of buzz about First Hill and Capitol Hill. Are you feeling good about your neighborhood? Are people feel good coming there?
Oh, definitely. We haven't had any sort of effect on much of the unrest that's going on in there right now.
Yeah,
it's very
safe. You're on the outskirts there.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, you know, I think that hotel is such a monument to that whole area.
It's a beauty.
To me, it's my favorite building in the entire city of Seattle. Mm-hmm. You go inside that place, it's just magic. It's just
sitting, Mike Malone signs your paycheck. He lives there.
Right. Sometimes.
And sitting in that foyer on a night like today, you know, very dark winter night, and have something, a nice bottle of wine or a cocktail or something.
It definitely transports you.
It's very, very special and sexy.
You definitely get transported to a magical place.
Right.
Yeah.
Maddie said we would be remiss. That's our producer over there, Madeline. If we didn't talk about the do-it-yourself s'mores.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is this happening out in the tent?
Yeah, yeah. So we're calling it the Star Garden Dinner, and it's specifically put together for the outdoor experience in mind. You know, a lot of these times when you're dining in a tent when it's kind of cold outside, it can feel kind of weird. So we wanted to make a sort of outdoor experience type dinner, which would be it starts off with a steaming bowl of a chicken cacciatore and a little a cast iron bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes into a full three-tiered fondue course, so a nice warm hot fondue. And then the third course is a tabletop s'mores kit, so you're able to roast your marshmallows outside. So doing that, you know, outside with the star lights in the night sky is a lot of fun. It's really
nice bottle of.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, nice bottle of bubbles. You know, so
cool. So what kind of wine would you drink with s'mores, Chef?
I'm thinking cacciatore before I think.
Oh, you thought cacciatore.
I was at the cacciatore. I wasn't at the s'mores. By the time I get to the s'mores, I'd be cognac.
Right, there you go. That's where I'd be, Calvados or something like that.
Somewhere in the hot section.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Well, thanks and good luck to you guys.
Thank you for the cocktail.
Absolutely.
Stella's. It's up there at the Sorrento Hotel up on Madison, right? Coming down the hill in Madison and Terry, is it? What is this cross
Terry.
Street there?
Yep.
Terry? Yeah.
Terry Avenue, yeah.
So go up there and check out the tent, check out the restaurant, the new restaurant, and say hi to these gentlemen. Reed,
and all the best of luck.
Reed, thank you, thank you. Lots of fun.
Coming up in our second hour, we have a traditional Danish dish for our Pass It Down segment. Plus, Brittany Bartleman is back for the Baker's Corner. We're excited about that. And the Rough with Love Tasty Trivia is going to wrap it up on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's time for hour number two on the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotureau, the chef in the hat.
In this hour, we're returning to our Thanksgiving boot camp segment with veggie recipes and ideas for the big day. Chef Brittany Bartleman is going to be here for the Baker's Corner. I'm excited about that. I haven't seen her in a couple of weeks.
Very exciting. And she promised to, she's staying for the trivia and promised to.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Promised to kick our patooties?
Yes.
Yeah.
So
good. I like that kind of challenge. Of course, she always has Madeline on her side, so that's hard to fight the two of them. And finally, to wrap up the show, it's our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia brought to you by Rub With Love Spice Rubs and Sauces. First, let's go down to our Pass It Down segment. Here, Madeline Dow.
Yeah, we sent out a little note to our fans to ask about any traditional recipes that they would like to pass down for this Thanksgiving holiday. As we mentioned earlier in the show, people are downsizing this year a little bit, but we did get a lovely note from listener Rita Ann Schwarting. She has grown up here. Her parents were both immigrants. Her mom was from Denmark, and her dad was from Germany. And, you know, she sent us this lovely note about every holiday meal they had this traditional red cabbage dish. She was in her early 20s when she discovered that not every household in America ate this for Christmas and Thanksgiving and everything.
When I read through her recipe for that dish, it's like, oh my God, they cooked that a long time.
I know. Yeah,
they cook it a long time and you can freeze it for a long time. She's had lovely options of it for multiple years.
Read how long they cooked this cabbage.
I know. So she says that last time she made it, it was in her freezer from the previous holidays. from the previous holiday, excuse me. It freezes very well. Last time she cooked it, it was almost, what, for?
3 hours.
3 or 4 hours is what it says. Yeah. So she wanted to share this recipe with our listeners. It's a fun recipe to pass down. She's hoping to pass it down to her granddaughters. She's going to be definitely trying to make it again this Thanksgiving, though. She's going to opt for turkey tacos with just she and her husband for this smaller holiday. But I wanted to share this Danish red cabbage recipe with you, too, and see what you guys think of it.
Okay. Tell us what it is.
So you have 1 medium-sized red cabbage, 3 tablespoons of butter, 1 tablespoon of sugar, or more if you'd like, 1/4 cup of vinegar, 1/4 cup of water, a little salt, pepper, and then she uses 2 medium-sized tart apples that are both peeled and cored, and then they chop them up, and then adding 1/2 cup of red currant jelly.
So it's like sweet and sour.
I think so. I think that's where that German comes from, mixed with a little bit of the Danish heritage and that.
Red cabbage, little vinegar, little sweet.
Yeah.
I mean, 1 tablespoon of sugar in a cabbage is not a lot.
Well, they add the jam, too, the red currant jam.
That's true. Yeah.
And her family adds about 6 to 10 whole cloves as well.
Ooh, that would be too much for me. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
I think three would be more than enough.
Yeah.
None would be fine with me.
You know, again, they cook it down so much that...
Did she ever say, when you talked to her, what they serve this with? It's not the entree.
No, it's not the entree. This is a traditional side dish. So similar to, you know, but in her mind, it was as equal standing as the turkey and the stuffing and the gravy and the
mashed potato
Danish red cabbage.
Right, right.
So both for Christmas and New Year's Eve and Thanksgiving and all the big holidays that she thought. But again... It does freeze really well. She also, they like to make it the day ahead, and then she reheats it before they're serving it. So that's kind of nice. It adds one less thing you have to worry about for your dinner table.
I think it would freeze really well. I mean, that stuff, I don't see any issue in freezing that. So
yeah, and literally the recipe calls for it to be cooked at different points for up almost 4 hours. And so it's going to cook down into not a lot left.
It's not going to be left. Not a lot left, yeah.
You know, the last time I had red cabbage that really sent me wild was at Peter Cypress Labuznik.
That's a long time ago.
That's a long time ago, and I make a version of that to this day. I don't use the apples anymore because to me, when they break down, they kind of thicken it in a way that I like the stringiness of the cabbage, and I like the sourness. That's why I always love sauerkraut, right?
Right.
I mean, if you want to think about Peter Cypress cabbage sauerkraut, always was served with his caraway gravy on top, which is where I got my idea for the caraway sweet onion gravy that I make for many different dishes.
Right.
So I wonder if... so now this year, instead of making the cabbage, she's making turkey tacos.
She's making turkey tacos. It's just she and her husband this year, I believe. Uh-huh. You know, she wishes she could host the family per usual, I think like we all do, but she decided that she's just going to do her famous turkey tacos. It's a holiday staple, and she's hoping to keep this tradition alive, pass it down to her granddaughters, as I said, and I think use it hopefully next year.
So she's going to put the cabbage into the taco.
Maybe. She didn't specify, but I think that would be a good call.
That would be a good relish.
Keep the tradition alive.
That would be a good relish to the taco.
Now, if I was making turkey tacos, she doesn't really go into her turkey tacos. What makes
she does not, no.
Delicious. But if I was making turkey tacos for my Thanksgiving meal this year, I would simply take my pork rub, which is more of a Southwest-y kind of flavor. And then I would pound out like a medallion of turkey, or I would roast the leg and then pick the leg or thigh meat so I had a little dark, and then mix that with maybe a little bit of a mole or a spicy sauce, a salsa, and then put that right on my tacos, just like I would build a fish taco or any other kind of taco.
Mm. Yeah. It sounds really good, but I think that cabbage would be a great...
It'd be good. You know, Tom, I think one of the most requested Rub With Love spice flavors that we've had is a taco seasoning. When are you going to develop that?
I should. I've heard that before, and I should. I'm working with a young man named Trey Lamont, who came on the radio show a couple of times.
Jerk chicken.
We're working on a jerk chicken rub. Again, life got in the way, so it kind of got put to the side, but I need to come back to that.
You know, one thing that's really cute in Rita's story is that she said, I was already 20 by the time I discovered the other people didn't eat those cabbages.
Is there anything in your history?
That's a great family buzz down line. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. No, no, everybody
shield. Shield them from the outsiders.
When you're 5 years old and you're like, well, I don't want to eat that, they go, oh, everybody eats this.
I know, it's true.
And you got to imagine, it's got to smell pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, cooking cabbage for 4 hours in your kitchen. People freak out about the smell of a little bit of cooked fish. And it's like... But I would serve that with a little roast pork, you know, like a on the bone with a little roast pork with that
sausages
gravy.
If you were doing a nice little
sausages.
Sausage, even for breakfast, it'd be great, like nice breakfast sausages and a little bit of that cabbage in there.
You know, the Scandis love those potato sausages.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you go to the Scandinavian Deli in Ballard on 15th, you can get great potato sausages. You can get delicious potato lefse.
Yeah.
To serve with that cabbage sounds awesome.
Yeah, so, it would be so good.
You know, I have a little Swede in my me.
Really?
Yeah, there's
I
a Nelson.
You can see that from your hair today.
There's a Nelson in the family, I guess. And I didn't realize that until I was like 55 years old.
See?
I never thought about it.
Rita was good at 20.
Exactly.
I told my mother I was opening this little kind of up here at the hot stove bar. We were going to do a little Swedish kind of poo-poos. She says, oh, your grandmother, blah, 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 would be super thrilled about that. I was like, who? Who? Great-grandmother, who?
Well, we'd love to encourage more pass-it-down recipes.
Yes.
Feel free to email us at hotstoveradio@tomdouglas.com or send us a note on our Facebook page. If there are traditional recipes that you want to pass them down, let us know when you cooked them or who you want to pass them down to, all the fun stuff, so we can keep those recipes alive.
I love hearing those stories.
I do, too. They're
Makes
fun.
Makes me a happy person. Up next, it's Thanksgiving Boot Camp Revisited. This time we're going to talk vegetables. Right? Sound good? Looking right here at the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. Time for Thanksgiving Boot Camp. Chef.
Boot Camp. I like the word. I like the word boot camp, chef.
Boot Camp, yeah. Makes you want to roll your socks up and
feel like I'm putting my sleeves up and go, okay, exactly. Let's get some veggies in the house.
Exactly. So you want to start or you want me to?
Well, let's talk about, I think what we should start with is what vegetable do we have? What are the best vegetable on the market right now?
Let's set our table first. So, because sometimes the vegetable you pick, you have to pick to go with what you got going on, right?
Correct.
So we've got a roasted turkey.
Right.
And let's just say it's just aromatic roasted turkey. And then you've got a stuffing, right?
Right.
Stuffing has celery, onion,
nuts.
Bread, some nuts.
Raisin, maybe.
Maybe. Dried cherries go in mine. Lots of herbage. Onions, right? And now let's assume that we have mashed potatoes, because I think of vegetables as a second to your starch.
Right, right.
So let's assume we have mashed potatoes and maybe even a candied yam or something like that, a candied sweet potato.
Sure.
Now we got vegetables. So where do you go from here? And at what intensity do you go? See, because part of my concern is that you have to dial it back somewhere, right?
Because
you've got a lot of things going on in that stuffing. You got a lot of things going on in that turkey and that gravy. Where do you dial it back, and is the vegetable area the natural place to do that?
Well, it seems like no matter how many veggies you make, you're right. They always end up to be the one left out on the table, more than the mashed potato, more than even the cranberry sauce seems to be going. Of course, the gravy does too. But so I think that for me, I'm a big fan of Brussels sprouts. They're easy to make, or fairly easy to make, and they stay well.
Uh-huh.
So, and most people are familiar with Brussels sprout. I think Brussels sprout is in the camp of love or hate kind of vegetable.
Yeah, I think so too. My wife calls them turtle heads.
There's no in between.
Uh-huh.
Collard greens, it's always a good, to me, I think it's always a good thing to put on the table, because I also think it's in the same camp, but I think it's much more approachable in terms of greens for people.
And when you say approachable, what are you saying? Like, why are collard greens more approachable, say, than ruby chard?
Well, because people are more familiar with it. They see it more often. I mean, you have to go with what people know. Thanksgiving is not necessarily, you might have one item that people, you know, are not familiar with, but you can't make that a discovery plate.
Okay.
At least that's my feeling about Thanksgiving. It's very traditional, like we talk about.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I just don't think most people even know what, or have had collard green.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I live on a different planet again. Okay, well, spinach then. People know sauteed spinach, right?
Sure, absolutely.
So I know then they love to have their cream and all that stuff. I'm not very big fan of that.
Kale, you know, things like that, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, green leaves, so, but also a salad.
I was just going to say, how would you feel about eliminating all that cooking and just doing a more fresh, more crispy, more bright salad?
100% with it.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the least scary of, you know, you tell, oh, I have some salad. You know, it's like people don't normally say no to salad, or they go, you know, I'll have some in a minute or whatever. But a good salad of greens that are sturdy, that are crunchy, that have all those different components that we have right now. So a little bit of chicory, maybe a little radicchio, some endive, some arugula, a little gathering of, you know, winter crunch.
A bitterness.
Yeah, yeah, and bitterness at the same time, which goes really well with all that rich food that you're having for Thanksgiving. I think those are great. You know, you could put a little toasted pine nuts in there, maybe some fried shallots. You know, you just fry a few shallots in olive oil and toss them on top of that as you make your salad. A nice light dressing. Don't overwhelm the, you know, don't make a creamy dressing. I would go just olive oil.
Yeah, creamy is not a, this is not a good time for creamy.
No. I would
just go, why I would say also like an au gratin fennel or something like right, that. It's right, probably not the best time when you've got stuffing and mashed potatoes.
Correct. You
and,
don't yeah, stay away from that. You yeah, want to keep it clean and
but
fresh.
But a nice little fennel and orange salad would be yeah, delicious yeah, as a bright alternative to your
correct,
heavy plate.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I've been doing that I'm going to teach in my class this week is this kind of citrus cured kale.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll take the kale, just a regular, you can use the Tuscan style, which is the long, skinny ones without the ribs, or you can use curly leaf too. But take that kale and just fresh lemon juice and just rub it all over, just and then let it sit for an hour.
Right.
And the lemon juice cooks the kale as much as you want to cook. It still has crunch, right, but it isn't raw.
Correct.
And so it's just a fun way.
Tenderized.
Yeah, it's tenderized. And it's, but it's a fun way to bring brightness to a very heavy vegetable.
Right. Watercress is another thing that not many people use all the time. And, you know, this time of year, it's perfect. It's
now, how do you get watercress, personally? This time of year, you're really only getting the hydroponic watercress, right? Because it's too cold for any of the stuff that grows by the ditches on Mercer Island.
Are you going to the Arboretum? Right now, there's tons of watercress.
Is there? It's not
yeah,
too cold?
No.
I thought it would have frozen out by now.
It hasn't froze yet.
Okay, anyway, but you're not going to find that in the grocery store.
No.
So, but you're going to find the hydroponic stuff. And
correct,
that stuff, to me, is so flimsy. How do you...
I don't...
You wouldn't buy it.
That's not what I was talking about.
Okay.
I was talking
right,
about the actual watercress, the wild watercress.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a... Yeah, and how do you find it? Well, like I just said, you walk through the Arboretum and you wash your watercress really well. I just love watercress.
Yeah.
It's such an underutilized green, and I think in the winter, it's so beautiful. You know, we were talking about mushroom earlier. You do some quick sauteed mushroom like cromini, keep them, you know, cool them off a little bit and mix them with a little bit of sherry vinegar, or just a little bit of sherry vinegar, Dijon mustard. Make like a mushroom and sherry kind of dressing. Mix that with watercress. Oh.
I know a lot of people that hate sweet potatoes. And so what I would suggest
would
to them,
hate it?
They just don't like them. People have this phobia. They grew up with them with marshmallows on top.
Aye, aye,
for
aye,
God's sake.
Yeah, I
but
would hate them
if you
too,
were to take carrots instead, so you have the same color on the plate, roast your carrots, and then make a little fresh grated ginger butter for your carrots.
Mm.
So it's just butter. If they need it, you can put a touch of honey in there.
Yeah.
And then fresh grated ginger. And that's a nice bright orange alternative to sweet potatoes
yeah,
for those folks who hate sweet potatoes.
We did have a question come in about how to glaze carrots, if you can give some tips and tricks.
It's exactly how you make glazed carrots. You take carrots, and if you want to get really fancy like we do in France, you could do some soda water, and then you cook them gently in soda water with a nugget of butter and let it cook down very, very slowly, and they end up having that beautiful glossy, and I'm not quite sure why, sparkling water. Honestly, it's one of those things that I learned. I have no idea why.
Mm-hmm.
Why sparkling versus fresh? I have no idea. I've done it with fresh water many times. Little caraway seed, just a few, not yeah, a lot, just to a hint of flavor, and just a tiny bit of grated nutmeg. I mean, really, like three passage over your grater. Mm-hmm. That's it, and then you reduce that down very slowly, and your carrots end up to be still having a little firmness in the center, but really beautiful, glossy, melting kind of flavor on the outside, especially with the butter and a little bit of the spice.
One of the things that I'm always think about when I'm making my Thanksgiving dinner is I have limited burner space. So whatever
right,
I can throw to the oven, I maybe get started on the burners and then throw it to the oven. So
right,
that's what I would do for glazed carrots is I would start them in some butter, get a hot pan going, throw them in the oven at 450 degrees. They're going to cook in 15 minutes or so. They'll get a little brown caramelized edge. Then I bring them right back out to my burner with the fire on. And then I put my couple tablespoons of either honey or maple syrup or molasses or whatever the glaze I want. And then in that hot pan, just glaze it right onto the carrots. And then you're done. You don't have to think about it anymore.
And by the way, these are something you can do ahead of time. You can do it the day before, the morning of. You don't have to wait till the last minute to make your glazed carrots.
Mm-hmm. Even room temperature carrots are delicious.
Yeah, you just warm them up when it's time to eat.
Yeah.
Lots of fun things to do with Thanksgiving. Step out, enjoy. You know, I'm always a big fan of doing traditional things at Thanksgiving and adding one oddball dish. One thing that maybe you wanted, been wanting to try. It sounds good with turkey.
Grilled liver.
Okay, time to move on. Now, speaking of liver, Brittany Bartleben is here to join us for the Baker's Corner. She's going to be like chopped liver when we get done with her. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And we are happy to be joined by Chef Brittany Bartleben from the Met Markets, formerly of Dahlia Bakery, and going to be talking a little bit about maybe some underutilized fruits that are in the... Is it fun to be in the produce department?
It is. And my kitchen is right next to it. And so I love to walk through there. I have to go through there to pretty much go everywhere.
Uh-huh.
So berry season, I could smell the berries. Oh, right now, I can literally smell the apples. It's pretty exciting.
I walked through your store the other day. You're in the uptown store, right?
I heard. Yeah, I heard. I missed you.
I always ask for you. And they say, well, you know, she doesn't work very much.
Like, we're not sure if she moseyed into work today or not.
Doing.
It's funny because when she was at the bakery, she was always there.
So anyway, it's good to see things haven't changed. No, so I saw the big cheese that you had talked about, the 1,000-pound wheel of cheese.
Is it literally 1,000 pounds?
It came in as a 1,000-pound wheel of cheese, and you may have noticed that I body-shamed Tom last time I was here and said it's actually bigger than Tom.
Yeah.
What I meant was it was taller than Tom, not weighed the same amount. I realize Tom is not 1,000 pounds. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they've worked through...
Call me quarter cheese.
Quarter cheese, exactly. yeah, we've worked through a lot of it. I think we're down to sort of like the final stump, but it's a great cheese. It really is.
Surrounded by apples. And so what are some of the fruits this time of year that people kind of forget about?
I think the one that really gets me is persimmons.
Oh, yeah.
And this conversation was sparked by my sister who called me a couple of weeks ago. She gets a CSA and she was like,
community supported.
Yes, exactly. And so it's just whatever they've got, that's what she takes. And she said, I've got persimmons and pomegranates, and I have no idea what to do with them.
Now, there is no way anyone grew pomegranates here.
Yeah, I know. I was like,
I have a picture. I'll show it to you. My wife just came back from LA to visit her mom. She brought me some pomegranate for her tree.
Ah.
Interesting. Yeah. Well,
okay, so they do grow in LA, but they don't grow in Washington.
But she had them, and so I just took them off her hands. But the big thing with persimmons, I think, is there's two different varieties, and they're very different, and people don't always know what to do with them. So first of all, let's start with the hachia. This is the one that has the little pointed bottom. It's more of an oblong shape. This is the one you must let ripen, and I'm talking
to soup.
It'll be jelly in the middle. If it's got any firmness whatsoever, leave it alone. If you guys want to use them for Thanksgiving, buy them now and let them ripen, because they're not ripe in the grocery store. You might get one and you'll have to sit.
Banana.
Yeah, put them in a bag with a banana, whatever you need to do. But boy, once they do ripen, it is so delicious. And this is the persimmon that people use for persimmon puddings, or you use it like a puree.
Right.
So
Madeline's mother makes a famous persimmon pudding.
Does she?
Every Christmas Eve.
Yep.
Flame it up.
That sounds incredible.
Yeah.
Now, the fuyu persimmon, this is the one that you can eat anytime. It's kind of like an apple, really. It's never going to soften. You can leave them on the counter and they're tastier when they're ripe, but you're never going to be able to feel them and be like, oh, that's a ripe persimmon.
Right.
And this is the one that I treat like an apple. I mean, it's great in salads, things like that. But for baking, it makes a fantastic upside down cake, like a Tom's upside down gingerbread. I think you do that with squash.
Put a half in the
bottom? You can do just a half, or you can do thin slices and fan them across the bottom.
Like a pineapple upside.
Yeah, cake. Tom, is it in big dinners? The gingerbread you do?
The butternut squash.
That one is a great base recipe to, I mean, the butternut squash is delicious, but boy, you can do that with pears, apples, and I highly recommend it with persimmons, the Fuyu persimmon. It's absolutely delicious.
Use the Fuyu.
Okay. There is a book that just came out that I'm going to recommend to people that I'm obsessed with. It's called Dessert Person by Claire Saffitz. She's formerly of Bon Appetit, right. Really great pastry chef. And she has a bread that I made a while back that has, it's just like a quick bread. But it has the Hachia persimmon puree in the bread, and then the top is fanned out with Fuyu persimmons. And it's cool. Just a beautiful celebration of this fruit. I was going to make you guys one. And guess what?
I heard something
you
in
could
that
not
statement.
Find
my persimmons weren't ripe. I couldn't do it. So let me tell you, so many people think they hate persimmons. They hate Hachia persimmons.
Because of the tannin,
the
right?
The tannin. Yeah. It will dry your mouth out so
it's
much.
It's not any difference on the quince if you try to eat a quince when it's...
Exactly. Although I have seen people eat raw. You guys remember Amalia, who's with me at Metropolitan Market. Now, we'd be cutting quince, and she'd just come over and grab a slice of them. It was so weird. But yeah, they're so tannic that they will suck all of the moisture out of your mouth to the point where if you get a really underripe one, it's like you can't come back from it. It is painful. But it's just a completely different fruit when they're ripe. So I think just people don't really know the difference or what to do. So they're afraid of them. So I've been looking at the same pile of persimmons in the produce section, and I just want to yell at people, buy these. They're delicious.
Yeah.
And the next one, the one that you just mentioned, are quince. That's the one that I intentionally walk by them every day because you can smell them. They're so fragrant. If anything, just buy yourself 4 or 5 of them to put on your table and be able to, you know, fill your home.
And they
home
do ripen up, and they make a great jam.
Jam.
And they have so much natural
so good.
Pectin. You don't even need to can it, right?
Yeah. Right.
You can just... cook it down like you would applesauce and then makes jam.
Yeah, they keep for a long time in your refrigerator. I mean... Great garnish to a cheese tray, so many different things. It's really delicious stuff.
And if you've never used one, I think I was in my early 20s the first time I received a quince, and I was like, I have no idea what to do with this. So I ate it, tried eating it. It's like, well, I'm never touching that again. That's disgusting. But boy, what happens? It's another fruit that what happens to that when you cook it?
Yeah, it transforms.
So, and the difference... You can just the membrillo. That's from quince.
The Spanish quince paste.
It's just made by cooking down quince and sugar, and it will. There's so much pectin, it'll get so thick that if you cook it long enough, you can pour it out onto a sheet and then just cut it into cubes and serve it on a cracker with manchego. Very Spanish, very delicious.
Roll it in sugar and make a pâte de fouille.
Exactly. The easiest pâte de fouille you've ever made. Yeah. The only thing is you want to make sure you're stirring your pot regularly because it will scorch the bottom. The other thing you can do is poach them. And that's how I typically handle them. And so any sugar syrup, you can add a bottle of wine, you can do whatever you want. But just the difference between these and pears is you can just let them poach for... a long time. They won't really fall apart. They'll keep some tooth to them. And I will then do that and then strain them out. And that's when you can add them to a pie or again, an upside down cake or mix them into any sort of cake batter. They're so delicious. What happens to them? They're so kind of yellow and plain looking, but when they cook, they turn this beautiful rust color, which you all know. And it's just one of the prettiest winter fruits there are.
I love those. I mean, you're right. They're very known to most people, but they're delicious.
And it's really a great way to sort of take your Thanksgiving apple pie or pear tart to the next level.
Right.
Is just mix in some quince there.
Another
they pair beautifully.
As a starter, I think just buy them, let them ripen.
Enjoy that fragrance.
Just make a puree. You know, it's like, just let them, for the first time, just try it like that and taste it. It's so delicious.
Yeah. So the difference is when you're cooking them, if you want it to be puree, you're going to put that into the sugar and your water and just start that all at once in the cold and just let it cook.
Right.
When you're poaching it, you're going to want to bring your sugar syrup to a simmer, add your quince, and let it go a little more gently. But, boy, they're so much fun to work with.
And they're a great base to, like, the persimmon puree, and, you know, to put at the base of a crust.
Yeah.
Like if you're doing a tart or if you're doing
quince
a pie.
Quince tartatin, yeah.
Yeah, you blind bake your pie... And then you put, which means basically you're pre-baking your dough, and then you put that at the base of your tart, some nuts, and then pine nuts or whatever, something like this.
Ooh, pine nuts, delicious.
And then put a filling on top of that and then bake it again. Oh.
I mean, what a showstopper of a Thanksgiving dessert.
Persimmon to me, a ripe persimmon to me, is the same as a beautiful apricot.
Yes.
I think those two fruits have a change that happens to them when you cook them, when you do all that. Yeah. And they become such a beautiful, reverent food to cook with.
Oh. Yeah.
I have these beautiful old kind of English tin pudding molds with lids that have the locking lids
that
on them.
Steam.
That you steam. And so whether it's plum pudding or persimmon pudding or anything, it makes a beautiful design when you pull them out. Mm-hmm. And then you just simply steam them right before you serve them. And with a little hard sauce. Tell people how to make hard sauce.
It's the same thing.
So hard sauce, it's basically, you're going to take butter. It's like butter and booze, basically. Butter, booze, and sugar. And sugar, yeah. You can do powdered sugar or brown sugar. Back in the day, they would just take that with a wooden spoon and beat the living daylights out of it.
Basically, you beat it until it won't take any more booze, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. You just keep going until it's going to separate.
Yeah, it's going to start to break, and then you're going to say, okay, we're there.
Okay, that'll do.
It's oversaturated.
Do you have a favorite? Like, do you like Calvados? Do you like brandy? Do you like grappa?
I like rum.
You like rum?
Rum in a hard sauce. And I think steamed puddings, I would love to see those come back.
Yeah.
That's... And maybe the resurgence of old-time desserts from the Great British Bake Show that people are kind of getting into. I would just love to
They
see
are
those
so
come.
Rich, though. At the end of a big meal.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's just say you're like us and you've had a cheese course after the big meal, and then you have the steamed pudding.
Well, this is our national eating holiday, so let's do this. Let's pace ourselves and let's do it. Yeah.
So it's my understanding, Ms. Bartleben, that you would like to stay here, and what did you say in your email?
I think I said annihilate. Or I had some pretty violent language for you guys. And as Terry pointed out, that's usually when you lose, is when you trash talk.
We're going to find out next on the Hot Stove Society show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society show. It's time for a food for thought, tasty trivia. Chef in the Chapeau, how are you going to do today?
I'm going to do well. I feel really good.
You feel good. Chef Brittany Bartleben has stayed here from the Baker's Corner. How are you going to do today?
We'll see. We'll see. Anything goes. Yeah.
Boy, a little backtrack there. Today's this tasty trivia is brought to you by Rub With Love. It's my handcrafted, versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards that add a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable. Look for our Rub With Love products online. Amazon's got them. Of course, my buddy Stan up in Mount Vernon has them, or Stanwood. Wouldn't it be appropriate if my buddy Stan was in Stanwood? Certainly your local grocery stores, Met Markets. Shoreline Central Market is a big customer of ours. We love them up
there. Should I start carrying your product?
I think you should. Anyway, butcher shops, you name it, you can find them at tomdouglas.com also. So, Maddie, what do we have going today? What are the rules?
The rules are each of you will receive 5 trivia questions, and if you answer them all correctly, you win.
Yay!
And we are all playing for our loyal listener, Carol Clifton. She has logged into Facebook and is tuning in live. She's going to win a beautiful 3-pack of a turkey rub, mushroom rub, and our shallot mustard. I think all of those will go well with any Thanksgiving preparations. So we're going to be playing for her. And Tiri, you're up first. Are you ready?
If you lose, you have to pay for the shipping, right?
If you lose, you have to pay for the shipping.
Okay. Oh, whew.
Tom takes checks and cash and Venmo, all of the above.
Cash
but I don't know. Cash mostly. I have my money on Brittany. I'm excited for today. It's time
since
for girls.
Control the questions. I think it's
Hopefully, the quiz has been thrown.
What's the theme today? Is there a theme?
There is no theme today. We're going back to general food and beverage.
All right.
Yes. So
hit me.
You are up first. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What U.S. state is famous for their juicy peaches?
Georgia!
In the news this week.
Yeah.
Terry, question 2. In which country will you find the wine-growing region in the Yarra Valley?
Australia.
That is correct.
Was
2 for 2.
Was just there in January.
Oh, I would love to be there right
Pre-COVID.
Now. Pre-COVID. All right, question 3. Which percentage of cranberries are sold fresh every year? 5%, 10%, or 50%?
50%.
False. Only 5% of cranberries are sold fresh, while the rest are turned into cranberry juice, sauce, etc.
That is a big shock to me.
And that silly little jelly that they put in the can that comes out with all the ribs on it.
How dare you, sir?
My daughter
love that
loves
stuff.
That.
The one that's the one that when you unmold it says made in USA on top.
Okay.
Surprise.
I know. I thought that was interesting. All right. Water bath and pressure are 2 types of techniques for food preservation in what process?
Oh, sous vide.
Water bath and pressure. are types of techniques for a food preservation process. Preservation is what I would emphasize. Correct.
Of course.
In both cases, jars of food are heated and processed in such a way to kill organisms in the raw food to create a vacuum seal in the lid. Okay. You are 3 for 4. Last question. Hickory trees produce which type of nut?
What kind of nut?
it's a type of pie that your wife is craving.
Oh, pecan.
Pecan.
Yes. Did you know that, Tom?
No.
I did not know
that. I did not know that either.
They originate from hickory trees native to Mexico and the U.S. Okay, Brittany.
Okay.
You have a lot of room here.
I know.
Are you
so
ready?
So is he at 3 out of 5? Or
he's at 3 out of 5.
3 out of 5.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
All right.
See what I can do.
What is the name given to a baked confection made with coconut and egg white or coarse almond paste, usually made into a cookie?
Macaroon.
That is correct.
That was really hard.
To you?
Okay. Just
that
checking.
Is her only baking question.
So that I might be my only correct answer. So let me have this.
All right. Which popular candy was featured prominently in the classic film E.T.?
Reese's Pieces.
That is also correct. Well done. All right. What concept of the food industry involves cooking sealed food at lower temperatures for a long time?
Sous vide.
That is correct. The intention is to cook items evenly and not overcook the outside. You are 3 for 3. You almost had that answer earlier.
Yep.
Okay. My favorite question of the day. Which cocktail was made famous by rapper Snoop Dogg in the 1990s?
Gin and juice.
Do you want to sing it?
I do not.
Snoop Dogg currently holds the Guinness record for mixing the largest gin and juice cocktail ever, which measured at a whopping 132 gallons.
He's an American hero.
He is a hero. And I hope we will have that this afternoon at the dock.
132 gallons.
Yeah, gin and juice. Can't go wrong. All right. That is 4 out of 4. Your last question. Which U.S. state raises the most turkeys?
Let's say Wisconsin.
Close. Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Oh, Minnesota.
Okay.
41 million turkeys were raised in 2015 in Minnesota, which topped for turkey production. Next up is North Carolina and then Arkansas. Okay, you are 4 out of 5.
Not bad. Ooh,
still ahead.
Nice
you
show.
Cheery, yeah. So that's pretty good. What type of wheat is used to make pasta?
Durum wheat.
That is correct. Well done. Which American political figure was key in getting legislation passed to improve the nutritional value of food served in schools?
I know Mr. Reagan is the one who got ketchup called a vegetable.
Correct.
And so...
More current.
Michelle Obama.
Correct. Local hero. What is the original flavor of the filling in Twinkies? I also did not know this.
It's styrofoam.
The intended flavor of the filling in
no,
Twinkies.
The original flavor. When Twinkies first came out, banana cream.
Banana cream.
Yes.
What did you say, Tom?
Lemon.
Lemon.
Oh, like banana.
except long and not even close.
All right. The name of what distinctive Nordic dish translates as buried salmon?
Gravlax.
Good job. I thought that was going
to
be hard.
One,
it's grave.
That was
locked.
Great. Grave locks, exactly. All right, last question. Under which president did Thanksgiving become an annual holiday?
F.D. Roosevelt.
It's actually Lincoln. As a nation, the U.S. had celebrated Thanksgiving on and off since 1774. George Washington made a proclamation that it should be celebrated, but it was never consistent. Every year after presidents proclaimed the last Thursday of November to be Thanksgiving, and it was changed to be the fourth Thursday under Roosevelt.
Well,
Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Right.
No, Lincoln was the first one to make it an annual
that was
holiday.
Darn close.
Still, I think Brittany,
accept your loss, sir, with grace.
I think he gets a half a point.
Okay, who won and what did they win?
Well, I believe it's an official tie between Tom and Brittany.
Both
with 4 answers correct today. So you guys both get to ship our lovely listener, Carol
and
Clifton.
And I get to pay for the shipping.
And Thierry gets to pay for the shipping. Exactly, so.
All right. Congrats on your holiday 3-pack of Rub With Love products. If you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on Facebook at Hot Stove Society Radio Show. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by our team, Madeline Pennington and Amy Richardson.
Sound and production by Sean McFadden, and our editor is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. Remember, if you missed any episode of Hot Stove Society on Cairo, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app.
Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.